open a book and it invites you to fall in.
That was my North Star. I always sailed towards that star.
This dream that, like, if you just are passionate enough about the writing and, like, really throw yourself into it, it'll succeed. And, like, maybe, but you'll probably also, like, be homeless.
Welcome to the National Writer Series from Interlochen Public Radio. I'm Doug Stanton. Comedian, author, and blogger Samantha Irby says she has her own way of getting her writing work done.
And my writing ritual is typically to wait until 2 days before the deadline and then cry and write and cry more and then turn it in and hope for the best.
Samantha Irby created the blog Bitches Gotta Eat. Her debut collection of essays called Meaty was published in 2013. It's being republished in connection with an upcoming TV series based on the book. Samantha's latest book is We Are Never Meeting in Real Life. She talks this hour with author and storyteller Ilan Cameron. Ilan asked Samantha how she would describe Meaty.
Well, it's funny because I wrote it like 5 years ago.
Right.
And when we redid it, to reissue it, I was reading it and was like, who is this person? but it is a collection of, I feel like the word essays makes them like feel, you know, like smarter than they are.
Like academic.
Yeah, like feel like, I'm like essays. blog posts in book form. Mm-hmm. It's just a collection of essays that are about a whole host of things. All of them about me, so if you don't like me, you won't like it. But it's about like my terrible early dating life and about Crohn's disease, which is awful, but I managed to like squeeze some laughs out of it, no pun intended, on my fellow IBD sufferers.
You wear it with grace, though. You really do.
Thank you.
Make a lot of room for people's experience when you
Thank
talk
you.
About that stuff.
Thank you. So, yeah, it's just, I mean, my first publisher said you can do whatever you want, and we'll publish it. And when you read it, you'll see that it's, they let me do whatever I want and put it in a book, and somehow people liked it.
You guys need this book. If you don't laugh out loud while you're reading it, you probably need to get some help from a professional, just as a heads up, because it's really, it's real. I mean, and that's the thing about
authentic
storytelling. That's
hard to live up to. Like, somebody's going to hate read it and be like, no,
oh,
not funny.
Oh, you come for me then. Yeah. You come for me. You leave her alone.
They're going to be like, no, I didn't laugh out loud. The problem's not me.
Let's hope. We can have that conversation post facto. With the book having so much really vulnerable detail mm-hmm. about your, especially your experience with IBD, mm-hmm. With Crohn's disease, and having to use the bathroom urgently in a number of interesting settings, you know, that's so vulnerable. Like, how does it feel for you meeting your public when you know they know all about your bathroom habits?
Well, it wasn't weird until right now.
Oh, good.
No, I'm just kidding. I feel like if you've pooped in a bag on the side of the highway, there really is no such thing as shame after that. And honestly, it is, it's freeing. Because listen, like if I needed to leave right now and take a break, I wouldn't have to like fake a phone call.
No.
I'd be like, you guys know what's about to happen. I'm gonna be gone for 9 to 17 minutes.
Like, for the nine, yeah, side. Well,
yeah.
Definitely for your sake.
I'm gonna be gone for a while and I don't have to pretend like I wasn't just pooping when I come back. I think like one of the things that I didn't anticipate but has definitely like made me continue to write about it is people have reached out to me. I started raising money for the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation.
Aww.
And like people have, oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for clapping for my butthole. So I don't know if I can say that, but
you can say that.
I said it. And like people started donating to that, mm-hmm. and people would come to my readings and, you know, and like take me aside and be like, you know, I have that problem too. Thank you for writing about it. And like when people, when it seems like it's doing, my goal ultimately is to do a little bit of good and like, you know, make people laugh. I'd like to be useful in some way to people. Mm-hmm. And if like reading about that makes someone else feel less alone or less, I don't know, like I'm not enough of a student to like know how to say this properly, but I feel like socially, like poop is such a weird thing, but we all do it. Like no one gives you a hard time for breathing.
Right.
I mean, it's basically the same
right.
thing.
Or sweating. I mean sweating's kind of equally gross in
yeah,
some ways, right?
Yeah, and people have no problem being like, I sweat, but like, you know, if you have to go to the bathroom, it's like, oh, please excuse me, I'm sorry for this mess my body's making. but like if I help people feel less, you know, scared to talk about it,
yeah.
it just makes life a little bit easier.
Well, you're kind of saving lives then.
Well.
Basically, you're a life saver.
Yes, actually, yes. Well, where is my honorary Nobel Prize or whatever?
Coming. Yeah. Any minute.
Is there a poop equivalent?
We'll start one.
Yeah.
We're going to take donations tonight for the poop equivalent yeah. of the Nobel Prize.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
Well, I think too, you know, when people have an experience and they don't really know that it's a thing and they read about your experience, they're like, oh my God, that's a thing? That's a disease? Mm-hmm. I could like maybe talk to my doctor about that. So that's
yeah.
huge.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like now there are like commercials for medications on TV. So I feel like we've really made some poop advances.
Making a bigger wave.
Yeah, well, a bigger splash, I like to say. So I feel like it's becoming more and more, you know, I mean, the stigma is lessening. So
yeah.
if I can even have a tiny part in that, then all I can think of is like bad poop puns.
I know, it's so.
I'm really
I
like.
I want to hear them though.
No,
I think
no,
these people
no.
want to
I don't
hear
want
them.
Anyone to
no?
okay. be disgusted. But I feel like if we're removing the stigma from it, then maybe. I mean, you know, maybe younger people will have, because, you know, Crohn's like strikes early and kids don't know how to talk about it and
sure.
like suffering and silent agony. It's also the kind of thing that's really easy for people to write off. Like when I was a kid, everyone was like, oh, you just ate the wrong thing.
Right.
Or, you know, you need to, don't eat Oreos. And I was like, well, this is, now I know to say,
sure.
this is autoimmune, okay?
Right, I get Oreos. Like, screw you, give me my Oreo.
Yeah, but it's an easy thing to just like laugh off or to not tell someone. So if me constantly blabbering, if my constant blabbering about it helps other people go, like, maybe I have a problem, then it will have been
well,
worth
and
it.
Well, the shame part, too. You
yeah.
know, you can't underestimate the power of shame in people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is a silencer.
I mean, shame is a big motivator for me in other ways, but not in the talking about
what
my
ways,
bathroom
what
habits.
What ways does shame motivate you?
I like my social interactions.
Okay.
Like, I am always embarrassed all the time that I'm doing the wrong thing or going the wrong place or in someone's way. So shame is a big, like, don't do that.
Don't
say that.
So you've got an active editor working at all times.
Yes, unless someone, like, asks me what I just did in the toilet and then it all goes out of the window.
So the shame is for the rest of life, not
yes.
the toilet.
Yes.
I like that.
Yeah.
Or the bedroom.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Which is also liberating.
Yeah.
That's pretty
yeah.
rad.
Yeah, I would, you know, I wouldn't like tell you what I think about things, but you know, if you were like, what do you think about that movie? I'd be like, oh, don't say that. Your opinion is gonna be dumb. But if you were like, hey, did you have sex with that guy? I'd be like, yes, and how? And then, you know, very specific areas of freedom.
I like it. So you're, you know, obviously a very funny person. Have you ever thought about doing stand-up?
Stand-up is the devil. First of all, stand-up comedians are the worst people you could ever meet. Do you know, like,
you know,
a fun?
You know,
I know a lot
of
stand-up comedians, and they're all horrible. It also
Good note.
Doesn't pay. I mean, like, Chris Rock and Dave Chappelle make money, but, like, Joe stand-up is getting paid in drink tickets and, like, I'm too old to be willfully broke. Like, If I just happen to be poor, that's one thing, but I can't like
choose
sleep on. I'm 38 years old. I wear orthopedic shoes. I'm not like sleeping on a couch and I can't live like that.
I support that.
But also like the audience for this kind of thing, like people generally are like excited to see you and like not hostile. And comedy audiences like walk in the door like with their arms crossed, like impress me. And if you don't, they shout things up at you.
Never. That wouldn't go well.
No, I would die on stage. I would like melt like a candle and then they'd have to scrape me off and throw me in an urn or whatever. It would be terrible.
Right. Well, no one's gonna make you do it, I guess. But
No, I never would.
So do you
also like touring? I hate being on the road.
Yeah. You like your house, thanks. Right?
I do.
You probably have a nice bed with good linens.
Yeah, I do.
From what I've read, you have a good taste for like home products.
Yes. I do like a fancy candle, so that's not the life of a touring comic, I'm telling you. They're not like lighting Jo Malone candles at night. They are not. They're like eating cat food.
and drinking.
Yeah, sleeping in the back seat of their car. No thanks.
No. So what are some of the other things about touring that you're kind of like, I could maybe live without?
Well, I have not traveled a lot, so I'm on tour now. I've been away from home for like 6 weeks,
which is
a long time. Well, everybody gasped.
That's a lot.
I'm glad you feel very sorry for me sleeping in free hotels. But like, I don't know a lot about like traveling, and like when I was in D.C., so like the publisher pays for your hotel and you just go and check in, but something was wrong with the card. And because I am filled with shame, I immediately felt like it was my fault.
Oh, no.
And they asked me for a card, and I gave them one, but...
it was a gamble.
Yeah, I don't really have, like, Traverse City credit. I have, like, Flint credit. That's a terrible thing to say. That's a horrible thing to say. If you laughed at that, you're racist. It's not
That's
on me.
True.
But I'm just kidding. No, I'm just kidding.
Sorry.
So I give them like my one Amex that I got in the airport because you know how like you have
a
long layover.
Flight, right?
Yeah, you have a long layover and the lady asks you like six times when you walk by her going to the bathroom, like, hey, wanna apply? So like they gave me a card with like $1,000 limit or something. And so I give it to this hotel clerk or like desk person. And I was like, this is not gonna go through. And it did, but then my phone blew up because the Amex was like,
you don't do this.
Yeah. Who do you think you are? We gave you that for show. we just want you to have it in your wallet so your friends could see it when you're like pretending you're gonna pay the check. So it's all the stuff like that. Like I didn't know how to get my laundry done in a hotel, and figuring that out is awful as you're like handing some poor hotel worker like your soiled clothes and being like, light starch on the bloomers or whatever. So it has just
Did you say that?
No.
I want to be in that world.
No, I turned purple and like shoved it out the door and was like, bring it back whenever, even though I really needed it the next day because I'm just so horrified by everything. So I would like to be at home.
Where your stuff is, right?
Yes.
You know how to work the remote.
Yeah, I don't have to like, you know, I always wonder, like, I know people don't pay attention to anything you ever do, but it doesn't stop the voice in my head from thinking like they have watched me like let in three delivery people, you know?
They're tracking.
Yes.
How much
they're like
is
a pizza, hot dogs. You know what I mean? I'm like, they don't care, but like that's all the stuff that drives me nuts.
But you know they know.
So, yes, they do know. It's their job to like watch what you do and
like
send people to your room. It's excruciating.
Do you feel like you're kind of being surveilled all the time when you're on the road?
Yeah. Well, if it's not the staff, there's also like this is the difference between having like a book on a little press with no money and having like Random House be your publisher. Like there's like a team of people in New York who like know everything I do when I'm on the road and like look at all the bills.
Like, what did you need 14 limes for, Samantha?
Right.
Like that kind of thing?
Yes. Yeah. Like, how did you kill every tequila bottle in that minibar? So I just feel like I'm under a microscope, and like that part of touring, I'm like, I'm ready to be.
Do you feel like you're being watched at home ever?
Of course, because I live with other people now.
Okay.
And I never had to before. And there's always someone who's like, what's that? What are you watching? What are you listening to? What's
what
that
you
food you hid behind that other food that you didn't want us to see? It's, I mean, it's torture.
Yeah. So,
I was just thinking that I wanted to get like an office, but like, you know, like some people like get an office like to have an affair or whatever, but I would get an office to like sit with my headphones on without anyone being like, need anything? And I'm like, pretend that I don't exist.
Would you hide food at your office?
Yes. Yeah.
I was just, you know.
Yeah. It's mostly because I don't like, so I have a wife now who's like a healthy person.
Congratulations.
You know? Thank you. It was a big accomplishment tricking a sane woman with good health insurance to let me get some of that. That's probably, people are like, are you proud of being a New York Times bestseller? And I'm like, no, you know what I'm really proud of? Is tricking this white lady into letting me destroy her credit for the rest of her life. I'm like, that's my real achievement.
Ace in the hole, yeah. Right?
I'm like, the book thing, whatever. Do you know that I have Blue Cross Blue Shield? You know? I'm like, that's a real accomplishment.
More and more rare these days.
Yeah, she works for a school. She's got that teacher insurance is the
you gotta
best.
Get that stuff.
I mean, I love her, but the insurance is why I stay.
Major bonus. Yeah.
But no, when you like have another person in the house, like I think because I'm a conscientious person, I don't want to like be a terror to live with. So I'm always like, what did I do? And then it's also like, where did she put my thing that I left on the chair? I knew where it was. I know it wasn't put away, but it was like away to me. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I do feel like I'm being watched all the time.
That's tricky, I think. Yeah. You know, our audience demographic might not appreciate all of the years of research that you've done in television. And
is that what I can call it?
Well, sure. Why okay. not? I mean, it's dedicated work. Yeah. You have an almost encyclopedic knowledge, from what I can tell.
But that's not like an impressive thing. You know, if I'm like, I can name every Real Housewife and their pets, these people aren't gonna,
Some people might be impressed.
Whoa, they're gonna be like, go to college, idiot.
That would be rude.
They're gonna think it.
Because you're somewhat of an expert, is there a TV show that you think just everyone should watch? Like,
oh man, this is well, it's tough to do an everyone thing.
Right.
I'm not gonna say a reality show, even though I love reality TV. I feel like this is a smarter crowd than that.
A lot of book clubs.
But also, everyone here can probably afford Showtime.
Okay.
So, you know, talking to like millennials, they're like, I'm not watching that. But Billions, does anyone watch Billions? It's so great. It's like, I mean, that show is a jam. It's got Paul Giamatti, mm-hmm. whom you all loved in Sideways.
Of course.
And thank you for getting that.
Right.
Somebody
Thanks
over there laughed real hard. And who else is in it? Damian Lewis, who was in Homeland.
Totally.
It's so good. And then Maggie Siff, who I love from Sons of Anarchy, which I'm sure you all are well versed in. They're like, no, dude, we didn't watch that stupid show. But it's so good. It's smart. I have to watch it with the subtitles on or closed captioning on because it's all about like finance and lawyers, and that ain't really my wheelhouse. So I have to like, I have to read it as I go along.
Do you like
but
pause
it is...
and look something up sometimes or no?
No, I'm not that dedicated.
No. Okay.
I'm just like credit swaps or whatever, and then I just keep rolling. That is great. And then Atlanta is amazing.
Right.
Atlanta is so good. That's like, those are my two must watch every week non-reality shows.
Non-reality shows. gross. So, okay, we won't.
Also, I mean, Vanderpump Rules, but I don't think this is that kind of crap. Oh, my people.
See, they're here.
My
they're
people.
Here.
Can you believe that Britney got back with Jax? What a nightmare.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. What after what he put her through.
Wait, do you watch that show? Oh, okay. See, I'm a sucker.
I've watched it, though. I have watched a whole episode because I went down the...
It, like, kills your brain cells.
I don't know. It's got a powerful homing force, though. It's like you watch and you're just like, I can't stop.
Yeah.
So because you're so honest and vulnerable with your work and so real when you meet your people, does it feel like you have, like, a vulnerability hangover after 6 weeks of being on tour?
No. I mean, I think when people like come to see, like when like my people who've been like down with me from the beginning come to see me and are like, I mean, I get a lot of tears sometimes. Aww. I once got, when I was in New York, I got this was amazing. This woman brought her IBS support group. They have a book club. And like they all came and it was like really intense, like there were like lots of tears, and then I of course made it weird because I couldn't handle like all the earnestness, and so like after they cried at me for like 5 real minutes, which is a long time to have someone weep on you about her gas or whatever, I was like, you guys, what if we all had to go to the bathroom at the same time? And then they were like, you're a terrible person, and then they left. But it was like afterward, I was like, man, it was really nice that those diarrhea sisters came.
Wow. I hope that's what they call their club.
No, oh, I can't remember.
Sorry.
It had like a serious,
acronym
like,
or something.
Yeah, it had like a
it's
serious.
Name.
Oh
people
my God.
Of, okay, no, we can work on
we'll
that.
We'll figure it out.
I
we'll
really
figure
think we
it
should
out.
Come up with some acronyms for that. I invite you to join us.
Yeah.
Not on stage, but just in your own minds.
I don't know. It's not hard for me to, I mean, really, like, no one, like, shows up and, like, yells at me. So, like, it's nice for people. I get a lot of hugs, which has been awkward this tour because I had to stop wearing deodorant because I had thrush.
Oh.
Yeah,
boy.
I don't even have any kids. I just got it because I'm disgusting. And I had it in my armpit, so I had to stop wearing deodorant. So I have toured the country smelling like an ox and like having people like I've warned every crowd.
They come
like,
in for the hug and
don't
then
get, I'm like, don't get in here. It's very itchy and it stinks. And they've done it anyway. So
you're like,
I can't promise. I have gotten BO all over a lot of adorable young women across the country. So no, things like that. I mean, it's very validating when someone's like, I don't care how bad you smell. I want to hug you because of what you mean to me. So I love that. I love it. And then I go home and like, I go to the hotel and just don't talk to anyone for like, until I have to go to another bookstore.
So you have enough downtime scheduled.
Yeah. Yeah. I have done 4 events in a row this week, which is like the most I've ever done at any time. So I don't know. I feel like I'm holding it together.
You seem like you're holding
it
together.
Who knows? After this, I'm going to have a nervous breakdown. But right now, it's totally great.
As long as it's on film. As long as someone records it.
I can't. Not. We live in this internet age. I can't have my breakdown on Twitter or whatever. It would be terrible.
We just personal message me little bits.
Yes.
I know a lot of writers come to these events. Do you have any pointers that you like to share with other people who are striving to be professional writers or have a serious writing practice?
Professional is a little loose
okay, New York
for
Times
me.
Bestselling author.
Yeah, but look what I wrote. You know, I wrote a cat book about poop. Come on. I don't know. My advice is always, so I feel like the only reason I was successful at this is because I had a job and I didn't have to depend on my writing to pay, because New York Times bestseller doesn't come with a check. It's a very nice thing if you're the kind of person who likes to give people your resume, which I do not. I cringe, like, every time someone reads my bio, I'm like, oh. Just stop at black lesbian.
Done. Check.
But I wouldn't have been able to do what I wanted to do and do this writing that's, like, what I want if I hadn't worked for so long.
Yeah.
And I never had to compromise to, like, get paid. I never had to write, like, you know, think pieces or clickbait kind of things because I had a paycheck from the animal hospital so I could just do what I wanted. I had that job for 14 years. Yeah. It took a long time to get there.
That's a lot of animal.
Yes, that is a whole lot of getting bitten by other people's dogs. But I never had to, like, not do what I wanted to do because I didn't have to depend on the writing to pay. And, like, right now, I'm doing writing full-time, but I have a job, like, reviewing books, and I write an advice column for Shondaland. And those aren't, like, my passion projects, but they do keep me paid.
Well, that's important.
Regularly. But I feel like for people who are writing, I mean,
you're basically saying, for people who want to write, get a day job.
Yeah, work. Go to work and write on your lunch break and write on the weekends or whenever you're off. Like, this dream that, like, if you just are passionate enough about the writing and, like, really throw yourself into it, it'll succeed. And, like, maybe, but you'll probably also, like, be homeless and not...
You're not, like, a bunch of white people building a field of dreams in the middle of Iowa.
Yeah, I love the romantic idea of, like, pursuing your writing passion or, like, taking years to write your novel. So either you need to hook up with somebody who's like, I will work so you can write the next great American novel, or you got to take your ass to work and, like, do it on the side and then, like, find out that you'll still only make, like, $10,000 or whatever and, like, try to live off that until you have to get another soul-sucking job. So I'm realistic, man. You can't be like, Sam, you keep it real and then expect me to give you, like, writer story. You probably can't.
I probably can't.
I don't know how much longer I can be.
Aww.
I mean, I'm not gonna do this forever. It's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard. People don't always want what you're selling. Like, I'm like, you know, I got another few years of people wanting to be like, you know, wanting to know what my uterus is doing or whatever. And then I gotta tuck it in and start doing something else. So
practical.
Yeah. I am
you're
pragmatic.
Stay employed.
Yes.
That's
awesome. Keep working. And then if your book thing doesn't fail, you won't feel like, or if your book thing fails, you won't feel like a complete failure because you'll be like, at least I have this job.
Right.
So.
Good advice.
I mean, I really wish
advice.
I was uplifting, but I don't want to mislead anybody.
You're
going
to set people up for a disappointment.
Yeah.
I mean,
follow
I
your
think
dreams.
If you're a
I
New
mean,
York
that's...
Times bestselling author, like, you'd walk into places and people would be like, New York Times, but they don't. Do
I mean, they're usually like, oh, that person has mustard on a shirt and she doesn't even know. Or like, what, you know what I mean? Like, no one ever, if I go into a bookstore, like, sometimes they know, but even then I'm like, oh, do you think I'm here looking for my own book? Like, it's very embarrassing, so I don't do that. No, no one cares about this.
No.
I mean, like, a few people, my publisher cares, like, they're
sure.
very,
the
they're very
care.
Pleased, and, like, people here care, but in the real world, they're like, can you play basketball? You know what I mean? Like, they're, have you been in a movie? Like, they don't care. Like, are you on TV? Oh, no, get out of here.
Bye.
So, bye. They're like, get out of my face.
So does that affect your process? Like, feeling like, okay, well, I'm going to have to, like, crank some stuff out before I have to, as you said, tuck it away.
I think because, so when you sell a book to a real publisher, you have to give them an outline and they have to like what you're going to do. Because
mm-hmm.
We've sold the last couple of books, well, this one, and then I just sold another one. So there'll be another one in a couple years. I told you I gotta get while the getting is. I have to write it.
Mm.
I have to live some.
I thought you meant I sold it, like I finished it.
Oh,
so
no.
Still...
See, I was just gonna say, like, when you get to this level, you can sell a book based on a pitch that you have not written yet. So So I pitched a whole bunch of things. Some of them are things I planned to do, which you'll see. Hopefully it'll be funny. Yeah. Like I wanted to get into like woo-woo crystals and medicine and stuff. So
you're talking to the right person here.
Oh, great. Okay. Yeah. Well, let's talk about Reiki. But like, there's some fans.
Among other things, yes.
Reiki got the biggest
there's
cheer.
There's a big Reiki crowd.
You're like
up
New
here.
York Times bestseller, and they're like, pff, and I
you're
say
like,
Reiki, and everyone's like, woohoo!
You like doing crowd dive.
Yeah. So I sold it based on this pitch, and so now I know what I have to, or I know what I said.
You know what you said.
I would write, which makes things easier. But the thinking up what to write about was hard. So we'll see. We'll see. Also, the book I pitched, like the book, the cat book is not the book that I pitched.
Oh.
It changed. Like at one point they cut 40,000 words and were like, give us 40,000 different words. And I was like,
what?
Like I had a heart attack and then my ghost wrote the rest of the book. So
I cannot imagine.
Yeah. But at least now I have like a blueprint of what I have to do, which makes things a little easier.
You're like, I get that you just gave birth to this baby, but can we have different arms and legs?
Yes. Like, yeah, and you can't say no or else they'll sue you, and I can't afford to get sued. So I said, of course, and wrote some new
so
legs.
So those contracts are even more intense than a marriage license then.
I mean, I don't read mine. That's what I have an agent for, but yes.
Why would I read that stuff?
Everyone here is like, get this joke person off the stage.
No.
She doesn't even read her contracts.
I know. I don't know. Did we have contracts for tonight? I'm not sure.
I just signed something in the lobby. We'll see. Maybe they get a kidney after we're done with this. I wouldn't know. I was like, X where?
You wake up in a bathtub full of ice. Yeah. That's a thing.
Be like, oh, this is what I gave away?
National okay. Writers Series seems so innocuous. Yeah.
You're listening to the National Writers Series from Interlochen Public Radio. Coming up, Samantha Irby reads from her book, We Are Never Meeting in Real Life.
You're listening to the National Writers Series from Interlochen Public Radio. I'm Doug Stanton, founder of the year-long book festival held in historic City Opera House in Traverse City, Michigan. Let's return to Alon Cameron's conversation with Samantha Irby, author of Meaty, and We Are Never Meeting in Real Life.
Do you have any like rituals around writing? Like, do you have a special like sitting area or?
My desk is shoved into the corner of the living room. And my writing ritual is typically to wait until 2 days before the deadline and then cry and write and cry more and then turn it in and hope for the best. Yeah. I don't know any writers who write things like before their due.
Before deadlines.
None. Yeah. And I know a lot of writers.
Yeah.
I'm like, nobody does their things in advance.
Yeah.
This time I'm trying to change. But my first deadline for the new book is June 1st, and I'm supposed to have 5 essays, 2,500 to 5,000 words each, and I have written zero.
You're such a rebel. They're not listening.
Yeah, like May 25th. I'll be crying and writing and crying.
So you don't enjoy the, like when you have an idea for something, do you know where you're going or do you just like get it all out and then edit?
Usually if I know what I want to write about, I know how it's going to end and I write the ending first.
Got it.
And then I go back and figure out how to get there. So usually I don't write and I don't start anything that I don't know how I'm going to finish, which makes the process a little bit easier. Like if you know what note you're going to end on, I mean, you can start anywhere, but you know that you have to get to this place. And so sometimes I can do it in 2,000 words or sometimes in 5,000 words. It depends on what it is, but I always know how it's going to end.
Have you ever thought of writing an advice column for people with pets since you worked with pets so much?
I mean, maybe. So I have this advice column now. If you want to send me a pet question, I will answer it. I mean, I'm basically an armchair veterinarian. I ran that hospital for 14 years. I know
That's
a lot.
No joke.
I know a lot of cat stuff. If you have cat questions,
so, I mean, but you yourself survived having, and I don't mean to make anyone uncomfortable here for the cat people among the audience, but you yourself survived having pretty much the world's most evil cat.
Yeah, she was terrible. She was terrible.
I mean,
and
her
I had
cruelty
her,
was like...
I had her when I worked at the hospital, and, you know, I couldn't, like, sneak and give her away because they would all know. They would know if I was like, oh, look, this random cat came in to be euthanized, so I've suffered with her. I don't know, someone just dropped it off with a sign that said, kill me. So I, that was a contract that I definitely didn't read before
yeah. I got that cat.
I mean, she was great. I don't want to get too woman with a cat in here, but we learned to we're like two cars on the same road, but we never crossed in each other's lanes.
She knew exactly which sweaters of yours to barf on.
Oh, yeah. 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 I mean, she wouldn't barf. She was like a biting, attacking cat. It wasn't, barf would have been welcome. I'd have been like, oh, you puked in my shoes? Great.
That's so much better.
She once bit me on the eye while I was asleep. Yes. I was terrorized for like 10 years.
And yet you've made it through to get more cats in your life.
Yeah, well, it's like the prerequisite. You marry a woman, and they just give you three
cats
at the courthouse.
You get toast oven and three cats. Like,
yeah.
Here you go.
Yeah, they're like, here's a crock pot and three kittens. Mm-hmm. Look what we had behind the counter.
Oh.
So, yeah, now we have three cats.
Now you've got your lesbian lifestyle all set
yeah.
in a package.
Yeah. We just need, like, a riding mower or something and
make it
complete.
Yeah, what does a lesbian household need? Like, exquisite linens.
Yeah.
Nice scented candles.
Yes. Check.
What else? Like, three kittens, a toaster mm-hmm. oven.
A Carhartt jacket.
A multi-tool, like a Leatherman or another yeah. kind of multi-tool.
I don't even know if we have that. I'm not the tool person.
Okay.
I have some tools, but we can't talk about those. Okay. It's not appropriate. I have a multi-tool.
I think there's a lot of people who would like to hear about that.
Silicone.
Multi-speed.
It can't cut anything. I'm sorry.
Please, it's amazing.
I'm sorry.
So many
I'm not even
I
drunk.
Say.
I just am like this.
It's so good. So if you were to start this animal...
Oh, we're going back to that? Okay. Okay, no, good. Let's do it. Okay, my animal advice column, yes.
Yeah, I mean, would it be an offshoot of Bitches Gotta Eat, or would it be, which is Samantha's existing blog, in case you hadn't taken note yet. You should visit it right after you buy her books. Don't be a cheap jerk and just read the free stuff online. Buy the book. It's really good.
I'm gonna get T-shirts that say that. Don't be a cheap jerk.
Oh man.
I don't know. I feel like I would try to get like Cat Fancy or something to let me do it on their thing.
I was just picturing you in one of the like kitten poses from a calendar, being like, "Hang in there, pal."
You want to be my manager? We can make this happen.
I just got a job.
We can make this.
I'm so excited. I think it would be great, personally. Obviously, I have a bias about that. But I have an evil cat that I don't know what to do with. So, you know, we can talk about that more later.
Okay.
You had said at one point, after you're finished writing something, you just feel like it's complete garbage.
Yes.
Like, is that everything?
Yes.
And so how do you deal with the reality that, like, people are buying this thing that I believe is valuable and they believe is valuable, and you're just like, oh.
Thank you. Oh, that is very nice. Thank you. I don't think, like, it's, like, garbage for you to read it. I never turn off the, like, this could be better. This could be funnier. Mm-hmm. Why is that sentence so long? Why is, and so, like, redoing or reissuing Meaty, I was like, when they said they were gonna, like, buy it and put it out again, I was like, oh, great. I can go through and fix everything that was terrible. I can make, like, all those jokes better. And they were like, actually, you can write new stuff to introduce each section of the book, but you can't fix any of the old things because we don't wanna mess with the tone. And I was like, but if the tone is terrible.
Which it's not.
It's not. But it's I was like, just let me, like,
but it's your internal editor that just really wants to, like, improve things.
Yeah. So they fixed all the, like, they dotted the I's and crossed the T's and all the, like, copy editing stuff, but they didn't let me change any of the jokes. So it's not that I don't want people to read it because I think it's bad. I read it and I think, oh God, this could be better. Or, like, why didn't I catch this before? Or this could be funnier.
Well, that must mean you're getting, you know, better at your craft. If you feel like, oh, I could have done that better.
Yeah, or like spiraling deeper into mental illness. One or the other. Potato, potato.
Well, and I think it's an interesting arena to consider that many famous authors throughout time have struggled with mental illness and various health issues. And that's I love true. That you guys think that's funny. Let me go get my friend Vinny Van Gogh here. He's going to crack you up. But I think, you know, it's such an interesting thing to just talk about that vulnerability and dealing with the world that way. It makes me wonder if that's, you know, if the editor is kind of what drives the show for you.
I think when writing something, it's just the, like, getting it out and then being like, okay, this is funny. The world can see this. And then, like, with my blog, I could just put it out and I never had to look at it again. But with these books, like, you have to keep reading it to people. And then in my mind, there's the constant. So I'm ordinarily not, like, a finicky person. I do everything sloppily. I mean, well, I'll have you over and you can...
Looks really nice on Instagram.
Yeah, because you don't see my desk, which is piled with mountains of things. I like to write. I basically just push my laptop into the crap and hope that none of it topples over onto the keys. And then that's how I write. And then I slowly pull it out to, like, go work on another surface. So, like, it's not in my personality to be really finicky, but it's like if you had to read your high school diary over and over and over to groups of people. Like, if you take it home and read it, no problem. But if I have to, like, look at you while reading it, I'm like, oh, this, no.
Hurts.
Yeah.
That kind of hurts. Yeah. Well, which brings me to the
on that note, I'm going to read my diary
moment.
To you.
Yeah. Would you like to read your...
Yeah, I'm going to read a little something.
We have a selection tonight from We Are Never Meeting in Real Life.
Oh, thank you. Okay. So I'm going to read... This was requested by Anne. There is a... All of my things are too long to read in total because you would be here for like half an hour listening to me droning on. So this is from a chapter whose title I cannot say, but you'll figure it out if you get the book. And it's about this period of time when I was obsessed with Zumba, which, if you don't know, is the exercise dance craze that overtook the nation a couple of years ago. Okay. Ditch the workout and join the party, the official website shouted at my eyeballs. Zumba, and I quote, is the only Latin-inspired dance fitness program that blends red-hot international music and contagious steps to form a fitness party that is downright addictive. I am suspicious of words like addictive and contagious. And I immediately blanched while clicking through all the pictures of lean and toned soccer moms gyrating in crop tops and neon bicycle shorts, their perfect bodies beaded with sweat, their toothy, open mouth grins screaming, "I am having the time of my young and conventionally attractive life. I am a negative person by nature. And I typically shy away from anything that requires me to be having visible fun. I like to do stuff that I can sit quietly in the back and enjoy. And I have spent my entire adult life perfecting a bored yet slightly amused and entertained facade. And I just don't understand being excited about exercise. It's like doing a cartwheel on your way to have a root canal. My face just doesn't light up at the prospect of abdominal isolations. Also, the pictures. Look at that instructor guy with his shirt off. I'm not trying to embarrass myself tripping over my feet, doing watered down salsa steps while some red hot international instructor rolls his eyes at me in disgust and bounces quarters off his ridiculously chiseled backside. The Sunday morning of my first class, I got up and put on socks and my old New Balances while remaining in my pajamas. I can't compete with these jerks doing a revolutionary new fitness concept while wearing bikini tops, so I decided it was in the best interest of my self-esteem to go to the opposite end of the clothing spectrum and just look like absolute trash. Because even if I busted my melon open while trying to cumbia to the beat, at least my jibs would be appropriately covered. I took 37 Aleve and a Norco. That's real. And tried to inconspicuously stretch my Achilles on the train platform so it wouldn't snap in the middle of a routine. When I got to the gym, I paid the $15 drop-in fee and found my way up to the dance studio. I hovered nervously near the back of the gym, anxious for all the J-Lo lookalikes to start pouring in and making me feel bad about that container of Greek yogurt I'd eaten in the locker room. And then your mom came in wearing booty shorts and the shirt she wears to wash the dishes, flanked on either side by your Aunt Judy and your recently retired fifth grade teacher. Her sewing circle showed up next, as did her crochet buddies and all the ladies from book club, with the exception of Kathy, whose son had strep, so she decided to stay home with him. There's the woman who cuts your mom's hair, and Diane, who works part-time at Eileen Fisher in the mall. The school board ladies, the PTA, and the hockey moms came running in too, clad in biker shorts and racer back tanks with their hair pulled up in banana clips and scrunchies. I don't know what I'd been so worried about. I thought this was for attractive young people, I wondered aloud to no one in particular. A lady down the way looked me up and down. Yeah, she said, eyeing my flabby triceps and pulling a protein bar from her fanny pack. Me too. The music started, and our teacher, a boisterous woman who was wearing a sports bra and a noisy coin skirt, whose constant jangling set my molars on fire, started shouting and dancing and pointing out people who sucked as we tried desperately to follow along. I was winded after the first song, and 20 minutes in, I told the woman struggling next to me to call me an ambulance. I was sweating in the grossest possible way, sweat dripping from my hair into my eyelashes before rolling down my nose. Your mom is pretty good at Zumba, but thank goodness she ain't got no rhythm. The only thing that kept me from looking like a complete moron was my blackness, which kicked in right when I needed it most. I might not have gotten every single step, but at least I wasn't clapping on the one and the three. Despite the fact that I really did almost keel over and die, I was hooked. It is physically impossible for me to smile while skipping and jumping and fist pumping, but I loved it. Thumping loud music at 9:30 on a Sunday morning in a room full of wasps who are coming down off a Chardonnay bender, more please. These ladies yelled and whooped and screamed for an hour, Then they toweled off and hopped in their Lexus SUVs to congregate over skinny lattes at the Starbucks two streets over. The minute that first class was finished, I vomited my right lung onto the locker room floor, then went downstairs and signed over half my paycheck to become an official member of the gym. It was fun. My heart rate was high enough to make me feel like an actual sentient human being. And for your information, Ricky Martin made a lot of good dance music. So bite your hateful tongue. And it's lame knowing that I need the withering gaze of your hot-flashed perimenopausal mother to get me to samba my way to maybe living past the age of 39. But admitting defeat is the first step, right? I live in fear of the day I go flying off a moving treadmill, but pretending I can bachata to Gloria Estefan for an hour is something I can do. Plus, your mom said she would bake me gluten-free cookies and give me the number to her masseuse next week. And that girl has a tight ass. I've been noticing.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Thank you.
I almost choked on that ice.
Don't do it. I almost took. Spit took?
Yeah, well, that works.
Okay, you're the expert. Just one more thing. I was wondering, you know, being women of size, right?
Yeah, so I did this reading in Chicago, and we did the Q&A, which is excruciating, but also great. This girl stood up.
We'll do it here in a minute.
This girl, yeah, so don't do what I'm about to say. This girl stood up, and she was like, I wanted to ask you for some dating advice, which, come on, what do I know? So I was like, sure, okay. And then she was like, as a woman of size, did you ever have trouble dating? And I was like, first of all, woman of size is like, I mean, of all the euphemisms. I'd rather be like, you know, it's a person with rhinoceros-sized ankles. How was it trying to get people to buy you dinner? But, yeah, so.
And was this person a woman of size?
No, she was very small.
Oh, okay, neat.
So then I put a hex on her so she'll never have another date ever again.
She weighs 300 pounds now.
Yeah. I was like, oh, first of all, I had no problem. And second of all, your metabolism's going to stop tomorrow. So I'll check in with her a couple years. And she can tell me how it is trying to date as a woman of size. Can you believe that? Ugh.
What do you say, I mean, since this part of your mind that's kind of constantly trying to improve things is
that is a nice
very
way to put it.
Active, how do you deal with body image stuff? I mean, we live in this culture that's kind of rough on us.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I feel like if body negativity was a movement, I'd be in that, but it isn't.
Right,
I mostly just like hate being alive, so.
All right. Well, I mean, there is a list in this book of all the things you hate about yourself, about your physical form. And that's bold. I mean, it's you're like, yep, every like that
oh yeah, thing. I make a list of all of my physical flaws.
Everyone.
There's a lot of them. There's probably more now because I'm a few years older.
That'll be in the next book.
Everything's hanging a couple inches lower. I think because like I'm creeping up on 40, right? And I feel like at this age, you can opt out of like looking good and like trying to keep it together, you know?
But you look good.
Girl. So, well, thank you. Thank you. Stop it. You guys don't have to do this. You don't have to do that, but right. you know what
I'm
mean,
not,
though.
Like,
I feel like the general standards of beauty, right? That you have to be like
the beauty myth.
Yeah, that you have to be like thin and toned and all that. I feel like there's like an age limit to that. I mean, physically, you just can't, right? And like you're not in charge of your hormones anymore.
Right?
I had an almost hysterectomy. I had to have the surgery on my uterus, and like you start to realize that your hormones are in charge of everything. You can't do anything. You're powerless against your body. And so I feel like thinness and looking good is like a young person's game anyway. So now I'm at the point where, like, I can admire someone. And I love when people are like, I love myself. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to wear shorts, even though, like, right. I'm a chubby girl. Like, I love all of that. And I want everyone to do what they want. I prefer to wear a sack and, like,
a fashionable caftan.
Yes. Yeah. I'm just at the age, like, you guys, I'm not even wearing, like, a real bra today. I didn't even lift them up. They're just sort of like held in place.
They're just smushed
like, and I feel like when you get to this age, man, like my reward for having survived this long is like hating the package, but also not changing the wrapping. So I just am like, I just want to like sit down and watch TV and never wake up. So I don't worry about, oh God, come on. It's okay. You can laugh. That was
they care.
Joke.
They care.
They're like, oh, please don't.
They really want you to feel okay.
No, I'm fine. But I like hate my body, but I don't want to do anything about it. You know?
That's a kind of acceptance.
I don't want to do anything. You know what I mean? Like there's got to be people in here who are like, like I'll walk around, but like I'll do Zumba or whatever, but like, come on. It's a
not
lot
like
of,
every day.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
I'm not having any kids. It's fine. It's just, I'll keep it going as long as it's gonna go and then check out.
Excellent. Well, I think we're gonna have some time to take a couple questions for the audience because that's your favorite part, right?
No, I do love it. Just don't say woman of size.
Yeah. Just use your common sense and courtesy.
Oh, it's nice when the lights come up. You can like see
people.
Everybody. Hi, everybody.
Samantha, welcome to Traverse City for Michigan Writers. I know you live in Kalamazoo now, so you're in the state. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering, writing the books, being on the road, what have you learned about what we in the U.S. tolerate when it comes to women's humor? Or what women are allowed in terms of what's funny, what's not, the C word, all of those kinds of things.
Well, I do use the C word, I think at least once. I know it's in meaty. I have always been a person who has just sort of said whatever, and whatever consequences, I just haven't had many. So I don't know, I have been lucky that like my work has been, at least as far as I know, well received. I do think that, I don't know, I think it's a good time to be a woman in comedy. I mean, women still have it hard, but I'm trying to take advantage of the fact that, you know, some of these dudes are on the way out. And like see if I can get my foot in the door before they come back. They always come back. So like while Louis's like, you know, doing underground comedy clubs in New York, if I could reach in and snatch some Viacom money and make my little show, that would be great. But I feel like there has been a good response, at least to me. I know a lot of women who are working in comedy and doing really well. Still not as good as some of the dudes do, but you know, it's all in time. We just have to murder them all and then it won't be a problem whatsoever.
I'm in.
So basically that's my career plan, is to kill all dudes and then make my little show, and then, you know, new ones will be born, and by the time they're ready to take it back over, I'll be, you know, on an island somewhere. Is that a good note to end on?
I love that. On an island somewhere.
Every dude in here is like, I'm not buying that. All right, thanks for having me, you guys.
Thanks.
That was Samantha Irby talking with Elon Cameron. Samantha Irby's latest book is called We Are Never Meeting in Real Life. Learn more about the National Writers Series and upcoming events at nationalwritersseries.org and listen to past programs at interlockinpublicradio.org. For Interlochen Public Radio, I'm Linnea Melkerich.